This is a Hat Trick podcast.
Oh, lovely.
Hello and welcome to In the News This Week, the podcast from some of the team behind Have I Got News For You, where we take you through our picks of the news this week when the TV show can't.
We'll be looking at both the serious and not so serious news items and trying to convince each other of which story we think would have been perfect for the show if it was on air.
Which it isn't. But let's introduce ourselves anyway. I'm Emerald Paston. I write on Have I Got News For You.
I'm Jack Harris, the sometimes producer of the show.
I'm Mike Raymond, sometimes series producer of the show.
And I'm Queenie Miller, the picture researcher for the show, which is obviously essential for a podcast.
Absolutely key.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
How are we doing?
Yeah, good. I'm quite excited that this particular angle of my Zoom shows off. I'm in America still.
Oh, my God.
The light switch is so different. Look at it.
You can get those in a Premier Inn.
Do you?
You can.
Jack, have you been anywhere interesting while you've been there?
Yeah. I think.
Other than the shop that makes chocolate hummus.
Chocolate hummus shop. Deodorant
also,
shop.
Also, another struggle I've had is knowing the colours of milk, right?
What?
What colour is red kind of milk in the UK?
Semi-skimmed.
Red?
No.
Isn't red it? Is whole.
No, that's blue, isn't it?
I don't drink cow's milk, so I've forgotten.
Skimmed. I don't drink milk.
You've completely blown apart my excellent story about milk by getting it completely wrong. Right? It's skimmed.
You're a creep if you know what colour skim milk is.
Of course I do, right? Because I don't want to go anywhere near it. In America, right, whole milk, red top. Just too confusing. There you go. That's what I've done this week.
Oh, my God.
So welcome to Have I Got Dairy Matter For You. Thanks for that, Jack. Next, Queen's going to talk us through vegan options.
No, I'm not.
But do you know what? I didn't think you'd be able to top the deodorant for just absolute sheer boredom, and you've absolutely nailed it.
But in all honesty, you've been working on the show, and it's been excellent.
For the American, have I got news for you?
Yeah.
You did a test show, right?
We did our test show last night, and it went very, very well. Ooh. It was so much fun to watch. And
so
the show host is Roy Wood Jr., who is amazing. And the team captains were excellent. And you can already kind of see the dynamic between, you know, the way you used to have the sort of Paul, Ian, and when it was Angus, that kind of style of three characters.
Mm.
You can already see that starting to form, even in the 2 hours record they had last night. So that's super exciting. But more importantly, milk in the US has got a red top of its hole. It's not skimmed.
I think on that note, we should crack on with the show.
Yeah.
To even more exciting things than the colour of milk, it's Keir Starmer. that's just a pretty good segue, to be honest. I think that's something he'd probably get into. He doesn't go on holiday, as we know. But if he did, he'd probably go to like the Milk Bottle Top Museum or something in Carmarthen.
Or he probably has photos of all the different milk types from around the world on his phone. I bet you that's like majority of his camera roll.
Are you saying I'm like Keir Starmer? Is that what you're saying, Emerald?
I think you are the Keir Starmer figure of this podcast.
Wow, okay.
Wow.
What political figure do you take, Queenie?
Thatcher.
I knew you were going to say that straight away. I was like, why have I even asked her?
I take 4 hours sleep. I'm this close to starting a war with Argentina.
We're going to get into round one. Obviously, the big talking point this week is Keir Starmer's Downing Street speech. We normally record on a Wednesday. We record it on Tuesday so we can have the fresh reaction to it. So no doubt in the fine keeping of doing such things and trying to be clever, a massive story will break on Wednesday and we'll be completely out of date.
Honestly, that Keir Starmer's speech is all over the news in the US. Can't get enough of it.
Is it really?
No.
So he gathered everyone in the gardens at number 10.
The cursed rose gardens.
He said the rose garden at Downing Street became a symbol of the rot at the heart of government. And he wants to change that to become presumably a symbol of like just sadness and depression.
He came out really po-faced, then he had his dark suit on and his dark tie. And I was like, this feels like a funeral. And I thought that's mean. And then he started talking and I went, oh, no, he's actually giving a eulogy for his own government already.
Oh my God.
Because it was just depressing.
Yeah.
He said before the speech, things will get worse before they get better. I don't know about you guys, with a couple of tweaks, I feel like that could be a really catchy song.
That's not in the 1997 one.
I thought he was potentially putting through a secret message through what he was saying. Because he said, you know, it's going to be painful, especially for those with the broadest shoulders. Now, who has the broadest shoulders in terms of tailoring? Donald Trump. He goes big on the shoulders. So essentially what he is saying is that he wants a Trump presidency because then he can foot the bill, somehow pay for the UK That's what I took from it.
Wow, maybe, Jack, maybe what is in the water in America?
Or the milk.
By yes. that same logic, we could say, actually, he's going to instate David Byrne as Chancellor of the Exchequer.
Now, that would be fun.
That is an incredible reference, by the way, there, Craig.
Yeah,
I'm really on board with that.
I'm young, but I know about the Talking Heads. That's nice.
I never thought I'd hear them brought up on this pod. And yet here we are with that and different colours of milk. I mean, it's interesting, but you say Donald Trump. He's such a wimp. So when it comes to Trump, he's holding off deciding who his ambassador is because he's waiting to see if Trump wins. Because if Trump wins, he's going to keep the same woman in, the Tory, who's can bear to stomach talking to Trump and his mates.
Mm.
And if he loses, then he's going to put in someone insipid like David Miliband to who he thinks will appeal, have more broad appeal to the Democrats. So he's a bit of a schemer.
It's so true. He sort of puts himself as not being a political operator, but you're so true. He really does do it. And, you know, it's partly why he got into power, right? Because he decided, well, I'm going to come in, I'm going to completely clear the board of any Corbynistas. And
after spending 5 years pretending to be one.
Yeah, right.
I was really excited about this week, though, from a show point of view, because I actually started back on the main show today, starting prep for that.
How's it going?
Day one. I'm still here. So that's a bonus. No one's found me out yet. But it's interesting because I look at it, it's like we haven't had the chance to do an election special, so we go straight in with a new government already. You can see the cracks. It's really fun and it's really exciting. And the fact that he's just, it's quite a weird tactic to be like, I'm going to point out all the bad things you can say, like, oh, it's going to take us 10 years to fix. Don't say that.
Yeah.
Don't tell people that.
Maybe this is what he sees. Maybe he thinks that this is like authentic politics. He's laying out and being true.
But he's been a bit selective over what he's being true about. Because one moment he's like, oh, I'm being true and I'm being honest. Except for the bits where he said he wasn't going to put taxes up. Except for the bits where he says cronyism's bad and then he brings his mates in.
Yeah.
So it really is, it's selective morals, which is an interesting approach. There was one funny thing. I don't know if you got, I think we definitely have this as a play. And there was a really funny moment where he took a couple of questions that were quite softball questions.
Yeah.
And then he went, I can't remember the name of the journalist. We went, you ask a question. And he said, oh, just before you do, I just want to say on behalf of everyone, like, congratulations on your daughter in the Olympics, winning a medal. You must be so proud. But did this whole big long thing. And it felt like a real tactical, like, softballing. It's almost like, oh, go easy on me.
Yeah.
And the guy
he shuffles his tough questions to the back and then goes to the, so what's your favourite colour? You know, that sort of.
What's your favourite colour of milk? And the guy just went, oh, thanks for that. Anyway, cronyism.
Oh, that is so good.
The thing we're here for. I'm going to ask you a tough question because I'm a journalist and this is my job. And if you wanted to congratulate me on how well my daughter had done Olympics, you could have just said it afterwards or sent me a text. But imagine you've done it in front of everyone.
He essentially got cool story bro'd in front of like all the other journalists.
He sort of did this whole sort of moral indignant thing about the cronyism, which again feels, I thought was quite disingenuous, where he said, oh, but you know, you've got to get the best people in for the best jobs. And I was like, but it just so happens that all the people you think are the best people are the ones who've given you lots of money and bought you suits from ASOS. Like that that Lord, is it Wahid Ali, just gave him a pass to number 10. So this guy's just walking around. All the other governments have gone, no one ever does this. This is unheard of. And they just gave him a pass and he held a party in the garden for all the other number 10 donors. And then someone went, hang on a minute, how did he get a pass? Well, basically a journalist found that and they went, oh, I don't know.
Yeah,
they said, oh, he doesn't have one anymore.
Yeah.
Which isn't the best comeback.
Literally took it off him after the headline.
Don't worry, it won't happen again. The Brian Butterfield approach.
But this guy, Wahid Ali, so he's like a big donator to the party. He's given them like £500,000 and apparently given Keir Starmer £16,000 to spend on work clothes.
Poor investment.
Yeah, I agree. Did anyone ask him in the Rose Garden how much his suit cost? Because that would have been my first question.
Yeah, that would have been a good question.
How would you spend it? I think I'd probably get loads of suits.
Rather than one really expensive one.
I would get David Byrne's suit.
Yeah. I suppose it doesn't play very well having one big expensive suit.
It's like Theresa May's leather trousers.
Oh my God.
I love that band.
They've been burned into my brain. I can't help it. It's the first thing I think about when I wake up and the last thing I think about when I go to sleep.
We don't need to know that, Jack.
God. I don't know if you guys saw this as well. Have you seen who's banned Keir Starmer from their pub?
Is it the Wetherspoons man?
Oh, Tim Martin.
No, he's too savvy. No, it's Jeremy Clarkson.
That's a surprise move.
He's not so tolerant.
Yeah. He's banned Keir Starmer from his new club, and he's described the incoming government as a merry bunch of ideological nincompoops.
I actually agree with him there.
That is straight out of the vocabulary of Clarkson, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I absolutely love that. What was that, Mike, again? What did you call him?
A merry bunch of ideological nincompoops. Now look at this fiesta. Do you know who else is banned from his pub?
From Jeremy Clarkson's pub?
Yeah.
Piers Morgan, presumably.
No, there's one other name.
The producer he punched?
I think he gets free steak sandwiches for life. No, it's actually James May.
Oh, is it?
So he took a picture of the board and it says Keir Starmer and James May. It's quite sad because there's no one to go to the bar for Richard Hammond.
Please, can I have a fizzy yellow beer, please? Can I have a fizzy yellow beer?
Welcome back to In the News This Week. It's time for round two now, in which we each bring a story from the past week that we think would work best for round two of the TV show. So I've got the power, so I can pick anyone I like. I was going to my head. Emerald, what have you got for us this week? Haunted or house related?
Not house related. Maybe not haunted. Do you know what? I think this might be quite like a modern story for me.
Wow.
Because my story is about the biggest comeback in recent history. And it's not the return of the iconic salt and vinegar Disco's crisps.
That's news to me. What? Shelves. Are we joking?
No, they're back, the salt and vinegar Disco's crisps.
This changes everything. I'm going to be back in 1 second.
But no, my story's not about that comeback. It's about Oasis, who have announced that next year they're going to be performing together for the first time since 2009.
Yeah.
As the UK's most legendary estranged brothers, it's not yet known if the Miller bands will be attending the concert. But they have announced it in a really hyperbolic way. So the post they posted said, "The guns have fallen silent. The stars have aligned. The great wait is over."
It sounds like a cult announcing the apocalypse arriving, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it?
The Kool-Aid has arrived.
How are you guys feeling about it? You guys Oasis fans?
I prefer Pulp. If we're doing a choice between Blur and Oasis, I would choose Pulp.
I can see that.
Very middle ground, Queenie.
I could not be more excited. I was 12 or 13 in 1994. Aww. So for like 4 or 5 years, Oasis was like everything to me as an angsty teenage boy who dreamed about being in a rock and roll band. So I'm going to rip out my skepticism and cynicism for one day. I'm going to get tickets. I'm going to go and relive my youth. And I'm very excited about it.
If I may put some skepticism back into this conversation,
please,
a friend
do.
Of mine already got tickets and he got an email saying that there may not be able to be refunds for tickets if the shows get cancelled for whatever reason. And I think there's a very high chance that shows will get cancelled because out of click of a finger, they'll have an argument and then they'll be like, yeah, no, actually, I'm not going to do it tonight.
Have tickets gone on sale? Because I think your friend's been scammed, Queenie.
Even he was reading the fine print of something.
Okay, yeah.
But they may not be doing refunds for some of their shows.
What I've enjoyed about the announcement has been some of the clips that have resurfaced of them, which I think we would definitely play on the show. Like the favourite one is someone asking, what would Oasis be if Noel wasn't part of the band to Liam? And he said, it's like asking, would Jesus Christ been a pervert if he had a crisp packet on his head? Which is delivered in a very Liam Gallagher way. And it's a fantastic clip.
Speaking of some of the ridiculous things that the Gallagher brothers have said, I have a quiz for you guys.
Oh my God.
I'm going to read you a bunch of statements. And for each one of them, I want you to guess if it's something the Gallagher brothers said to each other or if it's something that Tory insiders have said about the current leadership candidates.
Oh, great.
This is incredible. Yeah. This is why Emerald should win the episode every time.
Yeah. I think we just stopped the count.
Yeah.
Until you've played it. Okay. So your first question, who was called a working class traitor? Is that one of the Gallagher brothers or is it a Tory leadership candidate?
So is this something that they've been called rather than called each other?
Yeah. So I've taken quotes from the Gallagher brothers about each other and I've taken quotes from like Tory insiders and advisors about the leadership candidates.
That sounds like the sort of thing that Liam might say about Noel because he's bought a house in North London somewhere, fancy.
I'm not sure that that's an insult to a Tory.
Your instincts are right. It's Liam about Noel. Next one. If you put them in a room on their own, they're the only person who could start a fight. So was that said about Gallagher or a Tory candidate?
I think that this is this. You're trying to trick us.
Am I?
This is mind games now. I'm going Oasis. I think Noel said that about Liam.
I reckon that sounds like
calling your bluff.
Given, you know, it speaks to me of someone who's like very animated and quite angry and sort of like kind of emotions quite high. So I'm going Mel Stride.
So that was actually said about Kemi Badenoch by some party members in the south of England.
That's a nice surprise.
Great shout.
Next one. This person's stuff was described as risible. Motherhood and apple pie and let's all come together. So who used that as an insult? Was it a Gallagher brother or someone in
the
Tory party?
Did they use the word risible?
Yeah, risible. Yeah.
Absolutely not a Gallagher.
Damn it, it's too easy. Yeah, someone said that about James Cleverly. Okay, penultimate one. Who was described as the angriest man you'll ever meet? He's like a man with a fork in a world of soup.
I think that is Liam.
I know this quote.
Do you?
Yeah.
It was Noel about Liam in Q magazine.
I don't think a politician would be able to do something that interesting in terms of an insult.
Do you know the Noel Gallagher, Liam Gallagher spoon story?
Yeah, go on, Mike's good. It's good.
Liam Gallagher goes around to Noel's house and Noel opens his fridge and Liam's like, why have you got a spoon in your bottle of champagne? And Noel's like, oh no, it's this thing my mate taught me. So if you put a spoon in the champagne, it stops it going off and keeps fizzing, gets them out of pause. I'm saying, look, it's been in there for 2 days. And Liam's like, all right, that's amazing. And then a week later, Noel goes around to Liam's house and he opens the fridge and there's a spoon in the milk.
And milk related. So fits with the show's theme. Okay, so who was described as average at fucking best?
Isn't that the general slogan for the Tory leadership race anyway?
You're not wrong, but it is a quote from Noel Gallagher about himself. So he's showing a lot more humility than any of the Tory candidates.
I genuinely thought it was going to be one of them about themselves. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're all being nice to each other, though.
Mm.
We discussed, I think, the yellow card system. So they're all frantically, like, just every time they want to say something horrible, they sort of have to put their fist in their mouth. And
Look at their veins are, like, popping on their forehead, trying not to say anything bad.
That was great, Emerald. I really enjoyed that.
You.
Such a good quiz.
Yeah.
Love it.
I can definitely imagine doing that on the show and having some fun with it. Queenie.
Yes.
What's your story?
So we talked a lot about Robert F. Kennedy Jr. in episodes past. I have an update. He's done something crazy again, it turns out.
Endorsed Trump.
So Robert F. Kennedy Jr. apparently drove 5 hours to cut off a whale's head.
Oh my God.
In quotes, that was just normal day-to-day stuff for us, says his daughter, who's called Kick.
He's got a daughter called Kick.
Yeah, daughter's called Kennedy. Kick. I think that's really cool, actually. So I'm going to like skip past that. I think that's the best thing he's ever done.
It's not the worst.
I have been big into this whale story because it's kind of one of the things we've been talking about in the US, and it's such a good story.
So hang on, wait a minute. Keir Starmer, not mentioned in the US press. A guy who's dropped out of the US race, who's clearly clinically insane and called his daughter Kick, came out and said he cut the head off a whale, and that's...
He's a Kennedy. Who cares about Starmer?
Yeah, they would rather have that. No, I just think it's great. It's like, yeah.
They'd rather have a story about a man cutting a whale's head off rather than a man in a garden telling a depressing story about the state of the economy.
I mean, you know, I'd rather watch a whale's head being cut off. Than-
Can you give us more detail on this whale beheading incident?
So essentially in 1994, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., heard that a dead whale had washed up on the shore of a Massachusetts port. And he headed 5 hours north to the scene with a chainsaw immediately with his 6-year-old daughter. It was reportedly because he enjoys studying animal skulls and skeletons, because who doesn't? But he just sawed off the whale's head at a beach using bungee cords. He tied it to their family car.
Oh my God.
And just like casually headed back down to his home in New York. There's a really good quote from his daughter that says, every time we accelerated on the highway, whale juice would pour into the windows of the car, and it was the rankest thing on the planet. We had plastic bags over our heads with mouth holes cut out, and people on the highway were giving us the finger. But that was just normal day-to-day stuff for us. This wacky family.
That's like a horror film.
This is the best thing I've ever heard. It's better than camping, isn't it?
I mean, that's true.
It's basically resurfaced the interview, right? Because of the fact that Kit Kennedy has been seen with Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck, after he's just been divorced from J-Lo.
So it's like people have obviously gone, oh, is there anything interesting about Kit Kennedy? Yes.
Yes. She went with her dad. Horrific story.
And had to wear a plastic bag on her head to not get whale juice in her face. And but it was in Town and Country magazine, I think. And what's really fun about it is you read it. It's a really normal interview. And it has the little whale bit in. And it just carries on like it's a normal thing. Which really made me laugh when I was...
How unexcited about your job do you have to be and tuned out to just hear that and not go...
That's a headline.
Sorry, can we just go back to that whale thing for a minute? I have some follow-up questions.
My favourite thing about the Vice coverage of this is that he's got a lot of animal-related stuff. We talked about the dead bear cub thing and the parasitic worm and the alleged barbecued dog, that kind of stuff. But they went at the end of this article. Some of these unique stories may have contributed to the demise of RFK's campaign. May have. Might have been that.
I feel like he's living like a post-apocalyptic nightmare, but it's not been the apocalypse yet.
You say his campaign suffered. He still had 6 million people ready to vote for him in the last check. Oh, and that's not to say he wouldn't have got more. So despite all those stories, despite possibly having his brain eaten by a worm.
If I had citizenship, it'd be 6,000,001.
But you know, the funny thing is, because he's backed Trump now, he's come out and backed Trump. They've obviously done a deal.
Because he tried to contact Kamala Harris to try and get a position in her cabinet.
What?
And she was like, no. Like in order to get him to endorse her. And funnily enough, she turned him down.
Wow.
Yeah. But it would be really funny if they made him Minister for Agriculture or whatever the American equivalent is, put him in charge of animals. Thanks for that, Queenie. That was enlightening. Jack, what have you got for us?
So my story this week is about the NASA astronauts. A couple of people I'm talking to have thought it was quite sad, but I thought it was really funny. And essentially what it is that these two astronauts got sent up into space, I think it was in June, and they were supposed to do an 8-day trip into space. And it got announced on Saturday that they are going to be there for 8 months because it's already been delayed. They're supposed to go up for 8 days. But the spacecraft that they went up in basically has, and I quote, it's got malfunctioning thrusters and leaking helium, which you think that's not good.
It's relatable, isn't it?
They said they were supposed to go up for 8 days. It got delayed. It got delayed again. And then on the weekend, they were like, okay, well, we're going to find out whether they can come back in the next sort of month or so. And they said, nah, can't come back till February because the thing's just not going to get fixed and they can't send anything up. So these two astronauts have been stuck in space and will have been stuck in space for so much longer than they're supposed to. And it's because the spacecraft made by Boeing is just terrible.
Why would you go up in a spacecraft made by Boeing?
It's a good question.
That's crazy.
I wouldn't go to Torquay in a spacecraft.
But NASA have insisted that they are not stranded. They are definitely not stranded. They are just sort of waiting around a little bit. But it does sound, when you have to clarify they're not stranded, that they are definitely stranded. Wow. Yeah. The detail that I liked about it, and it's a question we would ask, is does anyone know what the reason, one of the main reasons those two went up into space? Does anyone know why?
They're filming Gravity 2.
Was it like a team bonding exercise because they weren't getting along? Because that would be terrible.
You've been sent to space for 8 days. To figure your differences out.
Naughty step.
No, they got sent to space, right, because they basically were going up there to fix the toilet.
No, so they're basically plumbers.
Space plumbers.
There's a pump on the ISS that turns, I believe the technical term is piss, into water.
Oh, wow.
Must have been a fun moment when someone worked out that wasn't working.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, it's still a bit tangled to this.
Bear Grylls would love that.
Yeah. Did we have asparagus last night? So they took this pump up, which weighs about 60 kilograms, right, to replace it. You're going to be out there for 8 days. Just take this pump up, help sort the toilet. But because they had this massive pump, they had to like cut down on the other stuff they were taking.
Oh, no.
And the thing that they cut down on were their clothes. So they only took one set of clothes with them and then they'd be there for 8 months.
God, did they manage to fix it? Because that would be even worse. Really? So you know, sometimes you get a plumber around and they're like, oh, do you know what? I need the 17A. Do you know what? It's back in the shop, mate. I have to go back and get it.
I've left it in the van on Earth.
So with the Boeing thing, Boeing turned around and said to NASA, we think it will be fine. We think it'll be all right. It'll probably be okay to bring them back. And that's what, we might just wait 8 months for that.
Yeah.
So it's Elon Musk who's bringing
it back. Yeah, SpaceX. So SpaceX.
Not him himself.
But it's funny because they are competing to get these contracts, Boeing and SpaceX. So SpaceX are like, amazing. Yeah, we'll help you out, NASA. And so they're basically Uber pooling it. Uber pooling? Uber pooling? I've got toilet in the mind. They're going up with it in a four-seater with only two people in order to bring two people back. Mm. And then that gets you a little bit into Elon Musk, if you want.
We don't want. Let's not.
Well, you'd have it as a little question, which would be, who thanked Elon Musk this week? And the answer is Chechen warlord.
Warlord, yeah.
Ramzan Kadyrov, who was driving around with a cyber truck with a machine gun on the back of it.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, thanks, Elon. And Elon Musk went, nah, it wasn't me.
Yeah. Although still safer than one of his self-drive cars.
Yeah, that's so true.
What's your story, Mike? What's your round two story?
My round two, it's a celebration. So the world's oldest living man just turned 112, and it was in all the papers this week. John Tinniswood from Liverpool. He's not the world's oldest living person. She's in Japan, and she's 116. So as we know, women do tend to live longer than men.
Easier lives, that's why, isn't it?
Obviously, all the papers, all the journalists swarming around this. What do you think John said when they asked him, why have you lived this long?
These stories, always say the most ridiculous thing. They're always like, oh, I smoked 10 cigarettes a day my whole life, and that's why I'm this old.
Or like, my wife died.
They do normally say that, yeah.
They do a lot.
Yeah.
Is it something to do with Liverpool Football Club?
It's not. Initially, he gave this incredible soundbite. I have no idea. I think they've probably cut out, please leave me alone and stop yelling at me through my letterbox. I'm 112 years old. I just want to die in peace. But then eventually when pressed, probably into getting them to leave, he said it might have something to do with the fact that he eats fish and chips every week.
Mm. Fish is good for you.
Yeah, fish is good for you. But it's coincided with another news article this weekend. A new report into people who live well into their hundreds says scientists have absolutely no idea why people live into their hundreds. But Professor Richard Farger, who ran the study, said, one thing's for sure, what you shouldn't do is take their advice on how to live longer. He said, just because people who live to 100 have certain habits doesn't mean you should listen to them. Just because you smoke 60 a day doesn't mean smoking 60 a day is good for you. So I put together a bit of a list of some of the other things. I went down a bit of a rabbit hole.
Nice.
Some of the other things that people say. I mean, I'll be honest, when I started going through this, I was like, there are way too many answers to this. Way too many people here. Like, there's the world's oldest person changes so much.
Like every week or something, isn't it?
Yeah.
But if you were that old and you were asked that question, why wouldn't you just say your silliest hobby? Just have a bit of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, what if you got
there was a hobby. I don't know if you guessed, one woman from South America, she actually had an actual physical hobby that she said contributed towards her long life, which was mountaineering.
Yeah. I can see that. That does sound like good advice.
That kind of makes sense.
Does it?
Yeah, because you're about your
health. You haven't fallen off the mountain, crucially.
Or was it loads of food stuff, Mike? Those people saying they eat certain things.
Loads of food stuff. So loads of things like porridge every day, boring. Someone who said the reason they live so long is they keep away from toxic people.
I like that one.
That's got deep, isn't it?
We're literally English. We wouldn't be able to do that.
I guess that's why they weren't English.
What is the thing that you guys all do on the daily that you could attribute to a long life if you live to 115?
I have no healthy...
Yeah, but maybe it's not healthy. It's just regular. Maybe that's just the thing.
Oh, okay. Regular. Yeah. Regular.
Genuinely.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'd say painting Warhammer.
Oh.
Because it's a moment where I can just...
I can't believe you've managed to shoot it.
You asked. You asked the question. I would. It's a moment where it's just one man and his brush. So a Japanese man who was the world's oldest man, unfortunately recently died, lived to 114, Jiramon Kimura, and he put it down, his long life, down to reading newspapers with magnifying glasses and watching parliamentary debates on TV.
Right.
So we could be in with a shot.
Well, I feel like I've aged 50 years just watching that Keir Starmer garden speech, so I call bullshit on that as well. Just very quickly, so obviously talked a lot about death now. Just to end on a positive note, a little tie-in story, just something really nice and heartfelt. It's revealed this week that Downing Street officials are preparing a media plan to announce the death of Larry the Cat. So I'll be there outside Downing Street with my party hat because he's 17 and clearly he's outstayed his welcome. So
state funeral.
Oh, God, if they did a state funeral and spent, like, loads of tax money on it.
Just in a Clark shoebox.
A little Union Jack draped over.
Gets a guard of honour from all the mice that he's tried to catch and never got.
They've made some plans, and according to the Times, these plans are stored on the government IT system, so good luck ever seeing those ever again. Okay, it's time to decide our favourite round two story of the week. I'm going to come to you first, Emerald. Who's getting your vote?
I'm going for Jack's story about the astronauts because I loved the toilet detail.
I had momentarily forgotten what Jack's was, so I'm going to go with cool. Emerald. And the only reason I didn't forget what Mike's was is because he just said it.
I mean, I'm voting for Emerald. Jack, whose are you going for?
Emerald gets my vote. Love a bit of Oasis.
Combining Liam and Noel Gallagher and political quotes of people slagging each other off. Lovely. So congratulations, Emerald. You're in the host chair next week.
Thank you. I'm trying to find an Oasis quote that corresponds to how I feel.
Is it, would Jesus Christ have been a fucking pervert if he had a crisp packet on his head?
Yeah, I think that applies in basically every situation. Perfectly, yeah. So, yeah, thanks, Jack.
So, thank you for listening to In the News this week.
For updates on the show, make sure you're following Have I Got News For You on Instagram, TikTok and X, formerly known as Twitter.
You can also get in touch with us there using the hashtag HignifiPod or emailing podcasts@hattrick.com. That's Hattrick with two T's.
Make sure you're followed and subscribed to the podcast wherever you're listening to it now, and we'll see you here for next week's episode. Say goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
No.
Mike, it's so cringe and sad when you do that bit. Just so you know, you should be happy.
Bye.
Dreamy Mike.
So joyful.
Happy now, you pricks.
In the News This Week is presented by Jack Harris, Queenie Miller, Emerald Paston and Mike Raymond. The producer is Diggory Waite. The engineer is John Wakefield. The executive producer is Claire Broughton. And the music is by Big George. In the News This Week is a Hattrick podcast. Do you remember your sex education? Was it helpful to you? Was it filled with scientific information rather than real, practical advice? I'm Diggory Waite, and this is The Real Sex Education. In this podcast, I'll be interrogating sexual myths, posing sex questions to special guests, and opening up our mailbox to answer your relationship conundrums. In order to do this, though, I need an expert. A sexpert, if you will. But the only sex and relationship therapist I know is my mum. Hello, Mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Listen and subscribe to The Real Sex Education, wherever you get your podcasts.